Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum.
Hoo-wah!
The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. But here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with veteran Jeff Gray, who was arrested for peaceful protesting. Then attorney Aaron Jensen will discuss our Second Amendment. Christine Myron will present Blue Star Service Dogs. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to welcome Army vet Jeff Gray. You know, we military folks took an oath to support and defend our nation's Constitution. Apparently, Jeff read that document, and he's aware of the rights it grants us, and he actually wants to regularly exercise those rights. He's really goofy, I guess, and he's gotten in trouble for exercising those rights. Jeff, it sounds like you're my kind of troublemaker. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's an honor to be a part of the show. Thank you.
Start by telling us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
It was so long ago, and I was such a young kid. It's just one of those things where you didn't really have any direction or know where you wanted to go in life. And I always thought the Army was cool, and just joined the Army to just for somewhere to go and something to do, basically. That's all. And maybe to learn a skill. There was nothing really romantic or big about it. It was just, you're young, you don't have any kind of direction in life, and you join to see what it's all about.
That makes sense. What did you do in the Army?
In the military, in the Army, I was a 88 Mike, which is a military occupational skill. It was a 88 Mike is a military transport specialist, which is just a fancy way of saying truck driver. And I went to basic training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I went to my AIT, advanced individual training for the MOS of 88 Mike at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri as well. And then after that, I went and spent about a year and a half or so in Korea.
So you served in the Army. Got out, got into life, and somewhere along the way, you got involved doing things where if something really annoyed you, you felt you could peacefully protest. Talk about what got you there and what you were peacefully protesting when you started getting in trouble for peacefully protesting.
Well, when I got out of the military, I was able to translate that occupational skill to being a truck driver. And I made a career of that. I was a truck driver with the same company for 25 years, basically the same company. The company itself changed, but I still worked for the same place as a truck driver. And being a truck driver, you're out on the road a lot. You see a lot of traffic stops, and you drive through a lot of towns. And you see how different towns and law enforcement agencies operate in different towns. And then there was a town of Lawndie, Florida, Waldo, Florida, and Hampton, Florida. This is three towns on about a 20-mile stretch of Highway 301 in north central Florida that are so notorious for being speed traps that I think it's AAA actually put up billboards warning motorists that were on the north and south ends of the town that they were about to enter a speed trap. And that's kind of how where I got started. I wanted to go to these towns of Lawndie, Florida, Waldo, Florida, and Hampton, Florida, and just film these speed traps. And this was back when YouTube just first started. I wanted to put the video on YouTube so that it would educate people about the speed traps, where the cops hid, what the speed limit was. And I thought it would be a mutually good thing. First, so it would slow people down through these towns because they would know what the speed limit is and where the cops hide. But it would also save them from getting tickets. And the very first time I pointed my camera at a law enforcement officer in the town of Lawndie, Florida, I wound up having my camera snatched out of my hand and was detained and threatened with arrest, and they deleted the video. So that's where it all started.
Wow. My experience with law enforcement is very positive. And that's not to say there's not some jerks in law enforcement. There are certainly other jerks in every group. But my experience with law enforcement is positive. But it sounds like this community had a let's exploit the heck out of probably all the snowbirds like me from Florida from Michigan coming down to enjoy it.
And that's kind of what I got. That's one of the things I wanted to film is it seemed to me that most of the people they were pulling over had license plates on the front of their vehicle. And here in Florida, we're only required to have license plates on the back of our vehicle. So any vehicle that would have a license plate on the front of it would obviously be from out of state. And that appeared to be to me the vehicles they were pulling over the most. And it didn't appear that they were doing it for reasons of public safety. It seemed like they were doing it more just for revenue purposes.
I remember when I first was in the Army and I was at Fort Benning, Georgia. I was advised to be careful about driving too fast or rolling through a stop sign or anything, because having an out-of-state plate, I would very likely be stopped. I never was stopped. Maybe I was just a good driver. I don't remember at that age. But yeah, that's certainly a reasonable explanation of what was going on. Not a healthy or good citizenship or good American reason, but at least a reason. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're talking with Jeff Gray. So did you keep doing that, or what happened?
Well, you know, I think what their intention was to scare me and get me to stop doing what I was doing, but it had the opposite effect, and it motivated me to want to do it even more. I guess, you know, kind of a hard head about that. Nobody's going to tell me that or intimidate me out of my right to freedom of press or First Amendment freedoms. And since then, I've published on my YouTube channel, which is Honor Your Civil Rights Investigations. I don't even know how, probably 1,000 videos, 800 to 1,000 videos since then. And you were talking about earlier that your experiences with law enforcement have been positive. Well, I published both the positive and the negative experiences with law enforcement. And the most viewed video that I've ever had on my YouTube channel was a positive experience with law enforcement. It's by far and away has the most views, and it was a positive experience with law enforcement. So I don't trick them or use my mind control powers to make them behave the way they behave in the video. It just documents how they behave and how they react to a civil right.
You mean you're like honest, showing both sides of the picture, all the truth? Man, that makes you sort of weird, doesn't it?
I suppose it does. I guess so.
Jeff, your title now is you're a civil rights investigator at Honor Your Oath Civil Rights Investigations. Tell us about that.
Well, at first we called them audits, or I guess what I do is kind of like to the same job as a health inspector. I go somewhere, like a health inspector goes into a restaurant, they inspect the restaurant, they look for problems with violation of the health code, and they report it. I go somewhere, I peacefully and politely exercise a civil right, and I document how public officials, including law enforcement, but also other public employees, like, you know, city hall employees and things like that, just document how they react to a person peacefully asserting their civil rights. And, you know, unfortunately, the majority of the time, it's a negative reaction. And it's the rare occasion that it's a positive reaction. But I do, in fact, post both positive and negative reactions.
Okay. And how long have you been doing that?
I started my YouTube channel, I think it was on January 7th, 2011. I actually was doing videos before that because I had an old VHS cassette recorder, and I was just going out pointing that camera at law enforcement officers, and those videos never saw the light of day. But basically, you know, just say January 7th, 2011 is when I kicked off my YouTube channel, and it's been ever since then.
Okay. We're about out of time. How can listeners learn more about you, stay in touch with you, support you? How can they do that?
Well, the best way for them to support me would just be go check out my YouTube channel, Honor Your Oath Civil Rights Investigations. Just watch the videos. And if you approve of what I do or like what I do, just watch my videos. I do have a Patreon page where you can become a member of the Patreon. And on the Patreon page, you get to watch exclusive and early access content and content that's not been edited or anything like that. And also content, you know, YouTube doesn't allow you to put some stuff on YouTube that maybe it shows violence or something like that. And that's kind of the nature of some of these videos that I obtained through public records requests, like body cam videos. You know, it shows the violence reaction between law enforcement and other people that they're arresting. And I'll put that on my Patreon page, where I can't necessarily put that on the YouTube page because they won't allow it to be there.
Okay. Well, how can people get in touch with you? How do they do that?
Get in touch with me. Just reach out to me through Facebook Messenger. Send me a message on YouTube, or just put a comment on YouTube, and I'll try to respond to it. But other than that, that's basically just social media, Facebook, YouTube. If you become a Patreon member, you can just send me a message through Patreon.
Jeff, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Thank you for serving our nation in uniform. Thank you for what you're doing now. I'm proud to call you friend.
Yes, sir. Right back at you. Thank you.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes. Do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Attorney Aaron Jensen. Like me, he's very interested in protecting our nation's Constitution and my particular case and his too, I guess, the Second Amendment. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Let's start with your background. When and why did you decide to go to law school? How'd that work?
Oh, well, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version so I don't put people to sleep. But like I said, I'm a lawyer by trade. It's not what I'm doing now, but have always had an interest in the law. And I grew up in Idaho and was very interested in civil rights and protecting those rights. And so that's what eventually led me to go to law school instead of following the path of going into federal law enforcement.
Okay, so I understand that. Everybody in my family, almost, but me, it was a cop. I went in the Army. So you're a little bit of a rebel like that too, huh?
I am. The running joke of my family, though, is that, you know, I was going to go do something cool, and then I hung up my manhood and went to law school. So.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that kind of harassment. Okay. So did the Second Amendment, or more particularly the right to be armed and defend yourself, that catch your attention before, during, or after law school?
It was before. You know, to me, when I got serious about training and then understanding how critical the Second Amendment is, I think in various aspects of our lives, it really was in 1999 when the Columbine shooting happened. It really made me reflect on, you know, what is the limitations that the government has to protect its citizens? And then to think seriously and critically about what does it really mean to be a good citizen? And those thoughts evolved throughout law school and then even after, but it came down to the point of, you know, really, our republic is not designed to do everything for its citizens. It just can't, including in many ways defending them. And so I think a republic was actually designed at its core to do the opposite. It was, I believe, intended to be limited. And because of that, there are things that it just simply cannot do, nor should we as its citizens ask it to do.
Yeah. I mean, if you read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, it's clear that our constitutional republic was to be a place where people could do their thing, not be cared for or overly restrained.
Completely agree. And that's really when, you know, we talked before this about, you know, the importance of getting trained and getting armed. You know, to me, there's two reasons for that. One, the first one is practical, just because when you have a violent encounter, when I'm talking violent, I mean violence with a capital V, you know, there's just not time for law enforcement to respond in most instances. But the second reason why I think that's critical is because it's critical to the preservation of our civil rights. Meaning the more we rely on the government to solve our problems, it's almost inevitable that our civil rights are going to be taken away under the guise of doing it for our own safety, right?
Yes. You know, again, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not happiness, the right to pursue happiness is what our nation is supposed to be about. You know, America has always been a safe place to live, but it has gotten a lot more dangerous lately. gangs and defund the police movement and the cartels controlling our southern border, all this crud. I firmly believe our citizens need to get armed if they want to, not forced to. They need to get trained before getting armed, as you've already discussed, and then stay trained. And they need to pay attention to the community, state, and national laws affecting our Second Amendment rights. What's your perspective on this?
I completely agree with everything you just said. And you know, I think it's important, though, to help people understand, and I fell into this pitfall as well when I first started training. You know, when I first started training, it was thinking of, well, it's firearms, right? And definitely firearms is a critical component of it. But I think as one trains and becomes more self-aware of the vulnerabilities and things that we can encounter, really the firearm just becomes one tool that you need to have in a larger toolbox. And it needs to be training, in my opinion, beyond just firearms. You need to get the right type of mindset training, those types of things. In addition, frankly, people need to get trained better, in my opinion, on more tactical type of first aid. And what I mean by that is military came out with a tactical combat casualty care, TCCC, which really revised and leveraged the 20 years of experience we've had in our latest war to really help focus really the most important things for first aid. And that's very different than your typical Red Cross type of first aid. But that type of critical first aid, if more people were trained that way, when there were these mass casualty events, I believe that the mortality rate would go down significantly.
That's a really good point. And it's all part of our need to protect ourselves. You need to have all these skills and certainly make sure that you know what the heck you're doing. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Attorney Aaron Jensen. Aaron, we've only got a couple more minutes. Talk about what advice you would give to our listeners about what they could, should, might want to consider be doing now.
Sure. Look, there are some of the best resources that I think us citizens have ever had to get high quality training that is from people who are undoubted experts in this subject. I've had the pleasure to be able to train with several veterans and people who have been there and done that, unquestionably. And, you know, I'll just mention one because I think it's probably the most holistic group of individuals that I've trained with. The person that runs it, his name is Bill Rapier, and he runs the American Tactical Shooting Instruction, or short AMTAC. But there's those types of schools that are out there that you can go and get training from. And, you know, I think some people think you go get training and it's just some type of big redneck event where you're just shooting guns out in the mountains. And it's really not the case. These individuals, like I said, have extensive training and dedicated their lives to preserving our freedom in their service, but then also helping citizens become armed and responsible armed citizens. So I would strongly encourage individuals to seek out quality training and take those courses that they're able to take.
That's awesome. I wish we had more time because we're on a great path. Is there some way listeners can stay in touch with you?
You know, not really. I'm here because we have a mutual friend. I feel very passionate about this, but I don't do anything on social media, but we're happy to come back sometime if you'd like me to.
That's great. So if you have any questions, folks, for Aaron, email me, Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. I'll hook on to him. Aaron, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation by educating and protecting people in how to be good Americans. I appreciate you, friend.
Thank you. Keep up the good work, Denny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Christine Myron about Blue Star service dogs. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show Christine Myron. She works with Blue Star Service Dogs. I'm really impressed with what they do and who they do it for. That's why I invited Christine to join us. So, welcome to the show, Christine.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
Christine, start by telling us about your background. How did you get involved with Blue Star families and dogs and military and all that sort of stuff? I presume there's some military in your family.
Yes. My father, he served in Vietnam and, had a hard time with that, talked about having a hard time coming home. And he had asked me when I started working with veterans almost 30 years ago, he asked me to make it better for the men and women that were coming home today. So trying to do that.
I'm a Vietnam vet, too, and I understand what you're talking about. And certainly, when someone in your family that you love is hurting and you can do something, and that's rewarding in itself, not counting the good you're doing for society. So I can see that. Have you always been a dog lover?
I do love dogs. When I got into Blue Star, that was the bonus, because I've been working with veterans in crisis, so residential rehab for veterans with PTSD and traumatic brain injury was where I started at a previous company, and we had that going on, and dogs were always a wonderful part of the program. We always had dogs in the house. We worked with training dogs and service dogs, and really saw a benefit to it in the residential rehab component of therapy.
Okay, so you were doing something else, working with veterans, helping them when Blue Star Dog had an opening and you jumped in. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, a wonderful family founded the organization and had a huge passion for it and was deciding to get a retirement and try something new, asked me to be the executive director and take it to a new level. And I was honored to do so. We had worked together in the past with the veterans in our residential rehab and with the nonprofit, and it was just a really great second career, I guess. I left the old company and started working for a nonprofit, and haven't looked back since. It's been wonderful.
Okay, Blue Star Service Dogs. Blue Star normally means families or people who served in the military. Gold Star implies that somebody died. Blue Star involves service. And service dogs suggest dogs helping them relax, get squared away. So I'm guessing that's the purpose of Blue Star Service Dog. Am I reading this right?
You are totally right. When we named it Blue Star Service Dogs, it was because Blue Star represents our veterans, our men and women in combat. And sometimes when they come home, they don't come all the way home. They're still in combat with their PTSD. So we got approval from the Blue Star organization to be able to fly the flag and represent those individuals at home, but still in combat.
Okay. So if I'm a Vietnam vet and I didn't have that issue, but suppose I did, how do I approach you? What can you do for me? Talk me through that.
Sure. So for the veteran that might have symptoms that are debilitating to their goals and their independence, they would look us up or other service dog organizations. They would look up service dogs and they can apply by going online to our website. And on the website, we have two programs. We have a program where we call it the STAR program, and that's where we rescue shelter dogs and we place them in our prison programs. We are partnering with two prisons in the state of Michigan. We partner with Thumb Correctional Facility and Saginaw Correctional Facility. And in Saginaw, they have a incarcerated veterans block for the state of Michigan. And so it's incarcerated veterans that are taking care of our dogs and training them prior to pairing them with veterans for our program. So if you're applying, what happens is you put in a request for an application. Online's very simple. You have to be a veteran. You have to be diagnosed with PTSD or traumatic brain injury. And you have to be willing to come to our training center in Pinckney, Michigan for training. And then you would receive a phone call. It's an information phone call. We provide more information about our program. And the veteran that wants to apply is going to provide some more information about their expectations of what it is. If it seems like it's a good fit, they're going to come in for an orientation in person. They're going to see a dog training session and participate with that, ask questions, meet our trainers, see where we're located. And then we have an interview after that orientation to see if it's really a great fit. And if it is, then it goes on from there and we'll start some observation sessions. Then the veterans will accompany us into the prison programs to meet the dogs. And then after a couple of sessions in prison, a dog will be selected for them from the trainers, and they take that dog home, and then they continue the training at our training session for really up to a year to learn all the tasks that that individual.
Wow. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Christine Myron about Blue Star Service Dogs. So, first of all, it's pretty clear that your program is primarily for the state of Michigan. Are there similar ones like this in other states, as far as you know?
There are great programs out there. Our model is fairly unique, where we have a long training program and we use shelter dogs. That's fairly unique. There's a different combination for many organizations throughout the country that are helping veterans. And some have breeding programs. Some have a two-week like boot camp. You get to meet your dog, learn about your dog in 2 weeks, and then take the dog home. So there's similar, but nobody really has all the components that we have in our program. And I think that uniqueness really serves the veteran longer and makes it more sustainable that they're going to use their service dog as a tool for independence longer.
That makes sense. So service dogs are available for vets across the country, but every community or every state is a little bit different than everybody else. There's not a one-size-fits-all kind of training program. And I would presume those can be found in other states just by Googling service dogs for veterans or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
There's some great programs located near everybody.
Excellent. Okay, sum it up for us. By the way, I'll bet you guys are a nonprofit and you would not be offended if people wanted to support you financially. Am I guessing right?
You are absolutely right. We're a nonprofit. We don't have any government grants. We don't sell a lot of merchandise. We depend on individuals, corporations, and organizations to sponsor the dogs' food in the prisons and the toys and the training treats and the training facilities and everything. So the generosity of patriots out there are definitely something that we benefit from.
Okay, Christine, how can listeners get in touch with you to donate, to seek help, to offer to assist you, to learn more? How can they get in touch with you?
One of the best ways is our website, which is www.bluestarservicedogs.org. They can go there. That has a donate button that has our contact information and contact emails. and has our phone number to our training center. You can always call there. We have a small staff, but we try to answer every phone call and return every phone call that we can, and stay in contact with people who want to know more or need help.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Christine, for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation and our nation's veterans. I'm proud to call you a friend.
Thank you, Denny.
Troops, if you're a veteran having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. That's PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please send me your thoughts at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. Here's the first one, Skip.
Well, Colonel, Army vet Debbie loved the fact that former President Trump visited East Palestine, Ohio, and passed out water. Apparently, something no one else could do. Where is our leadership, she asked.
Debbie, you ask a great question. Perhaps there is no leadership in the executive branch of our government since Trump left. Ouch.
And former Army medic Harry really liked the general's discussion on the way COVID was handled in our Army. We were really a mess.
Harry, apparently no one else in our military had the courage to say no when told to enforce medical rules that made no sense. We need leaders with values and courage. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 9 March 1847, during the Mexican-American War, U.S. forces under General Winfield Scott invaded Mexico 3 miles south of Veracruz. By nightfall, the last of Scott's 10,000 men came ashore without the loss of a single life. It was the largest amphibious landing in U.S. history and not surpassed until World War II.
To pick up on that, the Mexican-American War began with a dispute over our 1845 annexation of Texas. In January 1846, President James Polk ordered General Zachary Taylor to occupy the disputed territory between the Nueces and Rio Grande Rivers. Mexican troops attacked Taylor's forces, and on May 13th, Congress declared war. In March 1847, General Scott's forces landed near Veracruz, and by March 29th, with very few casualties, we had taken the fortified city and its massive fortress. In April, Scott began his devastating march to Mexico City, which ended on September 14th, when our forces entered the Mexican capital and raised the American flag over the Hall of Montezuma. And in February 1848, the U.S. and Mexico signed a treaty formally ending the war, recognizing Texas as a part of the U.S. and extending our boundaries west to the Pacific Ocean. You really liked the part about raising the flag on the Hall of Montezuma, didn't you, Skip?
Oh, I certainly could. And right about now, I break out into song. Would you like to hear the Marine Corps hymn, Colonel?
Can I pay extra not to?
Actually, you can. All right. And on 8 March 1862, the Confederate ironclad Virginia wreaked havoc on a Yankee squadron off Hampton Roads, Virginia. The CSS Virginia was originally the USS Merrimack, a 40-gun frigate launched in 1855. In early 1860, the ship was decommissioned for extensive repairs at the Navy Yard in Norfolk, Virginia. It was still there when the war began, and Union sailors sank the ship as the yard was evacuated. 6 weeks later, a salvage company raised the ship, and the Confederates began rebuilding it as an ironclad. On 9 March, it steamed from Norfolk toward Union ships guarding the mouth of the James River at Hampton Roads. The Virginia attacked the USS Cumberland, firing several shots into her before ramming the Federal ship and sinking it. The other Union ships fired back, but the shots were, in the words of one observer, having no more effect than peas from a pop gun. 98 shots hit the Virginia, but none did significant damage. The Virginia then attacked the USS Congress, which exploded. The Virginia next ran the USS Minnesota aground before calling it a day. It had been the worst day in U.S. naval history, and it signaled the end of the wooden ship era. But help was on its way. The next day, the Virginia fought the most famous naval duel in history with the USS Monitor, a Union ironclad that was able to fight the Confederate ship to a draw.
Wow, that must have been amazing. And on 7 March 1945, during World War II, the leading tanks of the U.S. Third Corps reached the Rhine River opposite the Remagen and found the Ludendorff Bridge there damaged but still standing. Troops were immediately rushed across to the bridgehead firmly established during the day. That afternoon, Hitler relieved Field Marshal Rundstedt of his post as commander-in-chief of the German armies in the West because of our capture of the Remagen Bridge.
Hitler was such a crybaby. Every time he lost, he threw a tantrum, Colonel.
He did, too.
And on 8 March 1945, Phyllis May Daly received a commission in the United States Navy Nurse Corps. She was the first African-American nurse to serve duty in World War II.
And on 9 March 1945, again during World War II, U.S. warplanes launched a new bombing offensive against Japan, dropping 2,000 tons of incendiary bombs on Tokyo. Almost 16 square miles in and around the Japanese capital were incinerated, and between 80,000 and 130,000 Japanese civilians were killed in the worst single firestorm in recorded history. Early on March 9th, Air Force crews met for a military briefing. They were planning a low-level bombing attack on Tokyo that evening with a twist. Their planes would be stripped of all guns except the tail turret. The decrease in weight would increase the speed of each bomber and also increase the bomb load capacity by 65%, making each plane able to carry over 7 tons. Speed will be crucial, and the crews were warned that if they were shot down to head for the water, which would increase their chances of being picked up by our rescue crews. The bombers took off from Saipan and Tinan, reaching their target about 12:15 a.m. on March 10th. 334 bombers, flying at a mere 500 feet, dropped their loads, creating a giant bonfire fanned by 30-knot winds that spread the flames throughout Tokyo. Masses of panicked and terrified Japanese civilians scrambled to escape the inferno, most unsuccessfully. 243 American airmen were lost.
And on 6 March 1965, the White House confirmed that, at the request of South Vietnam, the U.S. was sending 2 battalions of Marines for security work at the Da Nang Air Base to hopefully free South Vietnamese troops for combat. On 1 March, Ambassador Maxwell Taylor informed the South Vietnamese premier that we were preparing to send 3,500 Marines to Vietnam. 3 days later, we asked the South Vietnamese government to invite the U.S. to send the Marines. General Nguyen Van Thu, chief of the Armed Forces Council, approved but asked that the Marines be brought ashore in the most inconspicuous way feasible. The Marines began landing near Da Nang on 8 March.
By the end of the month, we had 3 Army brigades headed that way. And on 9 March 1974, the last Japanese soldier, a guerrilla operating in the Philippines, surrendered 29 years after World War II ended. And that's military history for today. So it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, on March 25th, Montgomery, Alabama, a woman called police after being assaulted by her husband. Officers advised her to pursue a protective order against him. The woman was on her way to the police station accompanied by her 2 adult sons when the husband chased after them and rammed his car into hers, driving them off the road. He then approached them while brandishing a handgun. One son, an off-duty sheriff's deputy, told his brother and mother to run for it while his father opened fire. Despite being shot five times, the son was able to draw his own gun and fatally shoot his father before anyone else was harmed. The son was hospitalized in critical condition, but is expected to survive.
Thanks, Colonel. This report is a very sad one, despite the fact that the bad guy was stopped and the innocent survived. Imagine being forced to shoot your own father because he is trying to murder your mother. It is truly a sign of the messed up times we live in. This woman did the right thing in leaving her home. When a family member is abusive, it's good sense to leave and seek out help from law enforcement. She also made the right call by seeking help from her two adult sons, especially since one of them was a sheriff's deputy. The decision to file a protective order was also the right thing to do. This event, even though the wife did everything in the right way, is a reminder that we live in a dangerous world. And even when we do everything right, there's still a chance that we can be hurt or killed by criminals. Protection orders are widely used legal interventions intended to reduce the risk of future harm by one person considered to be a threat to another. They effectively put the abuser on notice and also give law enforcement a heads up. It's also legal documentation that shows a history of violence and abuse. However, we have to understand that even though it's the right thing to do, it's still just a piece of paper and it's not bulletproof. Protective orders on their own aren't enough to protect women from their abusers. There are studies that document the rate that orders are violated, and it is a high number that varies between 7 and 80%. If you find yourself in a situation where you're being physically abused, the protective order is just one thing that you must do. You should also remove yourself as discreetly as possible from the abuser. If safely possible, plan it out and do it while he's away to enhance your chance of success. Go to a safe place to restart your life. In the end, you have to realize that protective orders are only effective when backed up by force of arms. For most women, it's a good idea to get trained and get armed, then carry the gun every place you legally can. And one other thing, be careful when choosing a mate. One thing I've learned in life, when you let crazy people into your life gets crazy. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this war-torn family, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's not an easy thing for a son to kill his father under any circumstances. Nonetheless, we pray that God gives this man a measure of peace, knowing that he had no choice, and that in the end, he did the right thing.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is entitled Zero. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Army vet Ed Fuller will discuss his book on leadership. It's awesome. Then Army vet Mike Miller will discuss renaming our military posts. Another Army vet, Tony Lentini, will discuss the new West Point Alumni Association. And Marine vet Jim Kirkland will discuss his Vietnam films. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud, Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.